I'm going to play a different song, a different version. I do this thing every Saturday. I do my regular show on Saturday, and I do five versions of a song that you are very familiar with, five different versions. So let's do that here. This is the Hit Singers. Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thanks for having me over.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to be back in a minute. This is Don't Worry, Be Happy, a version by the Hit Singers here on CQW.
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note, but don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late, he may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy. Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry, be happy. Yeah, I give you my phone number. When you worry, call me. I make you happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no.
Okay, well, I thought that was going to be more interesting. That was just like the other one. I am Kelly Hughes. This is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Also, CKUW.ca worldwide. End of space, 3.02 p.m. Thank you very much to Sherry L. and Ben Miller for coming in. We're doing Fringe Radio. We've got three more hours for you, and I realized I forgot to have lunch. It is 3.03. And I think not as hot as it has been, but probably a little bit muggy. I'm going to ask my next guests, because they've recently been outside turning on their mics. We've got Barb. How you doing, Barb?
Hi, great. How are you?
Great. And we've got Marsha.
Hello, hello.
And does somebody have a flyer? I forgot to grab a... Do you have a flyer for your show?
No, but we'll tell you about it.
Oh, come on. Come on. Well, you got a shirt on. The show is Agency. Tell us about the show.
The show is braids together three stories of child welfare, chronologically, British home child from the early 1900s, 60 scoop adoptee, and an inter-country adoptee from Korea. And it's kind of a Venn diagram of the overlaps in those situations and what's unique about those situations and how those kids have all been treated as commodities rather than having agency.
Did you write and direct this?
I wrote, Marsha directed.
Okay. Because I don't have a thing in front of me. If I had a thing, it would tell me. So where did it come from?
My life experience, my paternal grandmother was a British home child.
Tell me what that is, because okay. I sort of know what that is.
Yeah, but people often confuse it with war brides or Brits sending kids away during World War II, but it predates that. It was before the governments even had social programs. There were all kinds of independent agencies that were trying to deal with street kids. There was tremendous
urchins,
poverty.
Probably they called urchins. Them urchins. Yeah.
They called them street Arabs, if you can believe it.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
And they dealt with these kids. They picked them up, and then, like, there was just so many of them, they couldn't keep them. And then they suddenly realized, oh, wait, it's cheaper, actually, to send them to the colonies, where the colonies need labor. They need... we want to make sure the colonies stay British, so they exported. They exported over 100,000 kids to Canada alone.
Jesus.
Yeah. So that was one piece. I'm a retired United Church minister, and my first placement was at Long Plain First Nation back in the 80s, and they were just starting their own tribal child and family services at that time. So I was involved in several really difficult child apprehensions, saw 60 Scoop kids returning to the community looking for their roots. That's kind of haunted me. And then the other piece for me is having a niece who was adopted from Ukraine. So all those pieces kind of meshed together in my head into a stew.
And now, sorry, you said that somebody in your family, your parent or grandparent was a home...
My grandmother, yes.
Your grandmother, okay.
Yeah.
So is the play a giant bummer? Because it's a tough subject.
I'll
right?
let the director speak to that. Is
Marcia,
it a bummer?
Is it a bummer?
No, there is some humorous parts about it for sure. It's just we laugh at the irony of some of the things.
Yeah.
And the audience is laughing. Yeah, so it's not like it's a down and out, oh my goodness, this is a sad, downtrodden thing. By no means. We've had pretty much full houses for this entire run so far.
Wow.
We've come very near to selling out. And people are laughing.
Where's the show?
University of Winnipeg Asper Theatre.
And that's
venue,
a big... That's a big
number 10.
That's a big theatre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holds just over 100 seats on the lower balcony.
Yeah. I mean, the people that I know who... have had the hardest time are the people that know how to laugh.
Yeah.
There's one thing I've never understood is the stereotype of First Nations people as being kind of stoic. You know, that whole kind of like old cowboys and Indians, you know, the indigenous folks that I know are the funniest people who, and I sort of wonder if part of that is like when life is terrible and you have no agency, the thing that you can do is you can laugh, you know, you can make jokes about it. I mean, some of the humor is quite dark, you know, the things that I've heard people say.
And that goes for all three of the eras that the girls are representing.
Yeah.
Each one of them has humor in each one of them. Yeah.
I remember sitting down with a Cree friend and her dad, who's an elder, and as we were starting to eat our meal, one of them said, "There's something you need to know about us Cree. We don't like anybody to be funnier than we are."
Believe that. Who's in the show?
We have an 8-hander.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people. Ooh. So, okay.
Oh, afraid to forget somebody.
So you don't know. The short answer is you don't know.
Yeah,
who's
we
in
do.
I've got Jenna Anderson, and... she plays one of the girls.
Yeah.
Cynthia Wolf Nolan plays another girl, and Eliora.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, I can't remember her.
It's fine.
And then
she's not listening. So
Grant Burr plays Dr. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Nan Fuchuk. Natasha Fisher. And Renata Mikantz.
So you got some people around that have done some stuff.
Yeah.
What are the audiences saying?
Oh, that they love it.
Yeah.
There's been a terrific response. Several people have said they're coming back to see it a second time. They liked that it left them with a question, left them thinking, that it wasn't tied up in a neat little bow.
Yeah.
So that's been really gratifying for us.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a couple of Indigenous actors in your cast, right?
Yes, Cynthia and Renata.
And I just was having this discussion on air here an hour ago with we were talking about representation because it was a Sean D'Souza Coelho was doing a magic show, but he's talking about race and sharing space with each other and all those kinds of things. And to me, it's a very interesting discussion because, well, Fringe is a space. I mean, Fringe tends to be pretty white. So, you know, that is, these are all good discussions that yeah. we should be having. So I'm glad
and
that...
Eliora is Korean descent, and she represents the international adoptee.
Yeah. You have, sorry, you didn't give me the thing. When? So it's at Asper. When's the next show?
The next show is tonight at 8:15, and then there's a little hiatus due to Fringe... You know how they program us. The next one after that is Friday the 26th at 9:30, and then the final show is Saturday at 12:15, and that one will have ASL interpretation.
Well, that is that's great. That's really terrific because I've noticed that that's a thing that people are starting to do a bit. And I mean,
I wanted to get audio visual.
Described audio
involved, but it was too late for me. I, you know, so many things to take care of, and that one.
They
need their prep, and I just didn't get.
And one of the discussions I was having with Sean was, his show is all kind of about accessibility in sort of the larger sense, and they put him in Venue 5, which is upstairs at Warehouse, which is not accessible.
Oh no!
And even. Mitch Cron, who's coming in, uses a wheelchair, and he can get into his venue because it has a freight elevator, but it's not actually accessible, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, yeah, I saw his piece.
And some of these are just kind of, you know, problems with old buildings and stuff like that. But, I mean, we talk about... inclusivity and diversity and accessibility and whatever, and then but in practice we're a bit kind of
especially in wintertime.
It's taken us a while to get there. Yeah, I went to see some stuff at the Gargoyle the other day, and it was high noon, you know, elderly people with walkers and wheelchairs having to wait outside in the blazing sun. Not a scrap of shade. Like, we got to pull up our socks a bit.
Now, but his venue must be accessible, right? Because it's right at grade, and then it's just kind of raked
seating.
But the
washrooms are in the basement, and he's been fighting with the city to try to be able to do something different. But, yeah, it's a struggle for these venues, for sure.
Well, there's an old church we've got that we're turning into a space called the Valiant Theater, and we're raising money. We're about a third of the way there, but we need about $100,000. And most of what we're doing is accessible bathrooms and wheelchair accessibility. So we've got to have the electric doors, and we've got to have a big, huge wheelchair ramp, and we have to. And I mean, all these things are good, but everything's expensive because everything is more expensive than it used to be. And there's no like. And every once in a while somebody will say, well, you know, won't the government or somebody give you money to do that? And that's not how it works. Like, you know, you have to do it. And I mean, it's an important thing to do. But in Winnipeg, we've got all these old buildings, and they were not made for that.
No.
You know, I mean, they were not made for any kind of accessibility at all. Even in the church, like some of the stairs up to the balcony and the stairs to the basement, they're like this, you know? I mean, you know, even just for like a regular person, I mean, I've fallen down the stairs, you know? You know, that whole thing, it's partly, you know, getting people to think about those things and to know that those things are important. And but then we have a bunch of practical things to do, like rehabilitating our buildings and all that kind of stuff. How many plays have you written, Barb?
This is the second kind of big one. Years ago, I wrote a Christmas musical that was world famous in Saskatoon for a couple of years. But in my work as a clergy person, I had to write to deadline every Sunday. So that was a big piece of it as well. And I want to really credit Marcia with twisting my arm and encouraging me. This play started as a little 10-minute piece in Sarasvati Theatre's Bake Off short playwriting contest.
Okay.
And then kind of blossomed from there. And Marcia kept saying, what are you doing with that play? What are you doing? maybe we should apply for some grants. Maybe we should have some workshops. And on it went. So here we are.
And here you are. It's a hit. Everybody loves it. Everybody loves you. Everybody loves Barb. Everybody loves Marcia. does it have legs? Are you gonna? Is it going to live on past Fringe? What do you think? I know you're still in the middle of it. I shouldn't ask the question, but I'm asking it anyway.
Well, this play, like Barb said, started off as a 10-minute piece as part of the Bake Off competition. And when she won the Bake Off, it expanded to a one-hour stage reading with script in hand. And then that's when I was kept saying to her, you should do more with it. You should do more with it. And then so it expanded to about an hour and a half. And in order for Fringe limits, she had to cut and chop
okay.
to bring it back.
So there's
down.
a bigger yeah, piece there.
Definitely.
I had to kill a lot of babies, as that phrase goes. Mm-hmm.
Maybe my
favorite line. You have to cut that one out.
Maybe
darn
a bad expression for
yeah,
this show.
Yeah, yeah,
but
exactly.
Sorry, did you say is it called a Bake Off?
Yes,
it was.
But there was no actual baking.
No, but they locked how many of us were there? 8 writers, maybe, into a room for 8 hours, and they gave us 3 ingredients we didn't know beforehand that we had to put in our script. So I can't remember. There's a flat tire, a quote from Mike Tyson that I'm not going to remember.
Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth.
That's the one, yeah.
I wish, though, you hadn't sent Bake Off, because I made the mistake. I'm on air from 1 to 6 today. I made the mistake of not having lunch. And as soon as you said Bake Off, I started thinking
your stomach is grumbling.
Shortbread cookies and things. Are either of you good bakers?
I'm a good eater.
It's been a while, but I've certainly done my share of baking. Yeah.
You retired from baking? have any of you, you must have lots of friends in the local scene. Have you seen some other shows? Have you got some shows you want to go see? I know you've been busy, but...
I've got probably about 3 or 4 more shows that I want to see, for sure. Yeah.
Do they have names?
One is The Social.
Yeah, we talked about The Social a couple hours ago.
I was hoping to get in to see AWOL, but I think it's been sold out.
Oh.
Yeah.
How about you, Barb?
Yes, I saw Fifth Date at the Gargoyle, which was went to some very dark places I wasn't expecting, and again was one you leave with a lot of thoughts in your head, so I always appreciate that in a play. The Mail Room was a stack of fun, and Ingi's Fingies
was
utterly whimsical and charming and just delightful.
Ingrid is a genius. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And I'm looking forward to Bloodsuckers.
20th anniversary, yeah. I had just posted something the other day on Facebook, Barb, and you were talking about coming out in the 80s. Do you think, and because a friend of mine, Lara Ray, said that Fringe seemed good and queer this year. Have you gone to Fringe for a long time? Or
yeah, on and off. We're just so rich in July in Winnipeg. There's festival after festival. So last year, actually, I was at the Gimli Film Fest and missed most of Fringe.
Do you think there's more, I mean, in Fringe and beyond, do you think there's more queer art out there, queer artists, more people that are out doing their thing?
I think that's growing. And I'd liken that to our earlier conversation about making buildings accessible. We need to hear those stories. We need to lift up those folks making that kind of art. I think about performance artists like Shauna Dempsey and Laurie Milan just paving a brilliant way for that stuff to be out there. I think also, my experience as somebody who had to be closeted for probably the first third of my life, I think gave me a sympathetic response to the stories we're telling in agency about what's secret and what's confidential, what does it cost people to tell their story, and what's the liberation in telling our stories. My grandmother was very shamed by being a British home child. That was a she didn't tell our family until I was well in my 30s. My dad had never even heard the story. It was like, holy cow, why is this shameful?
Yeah, it is. To me, it's you know, I'm 54, and to me, it's heartening to see sort of younger people being a lot more kind of open and free, you know, with how they are and who they are and who they love, and even, you know, talking about their you know, their traumas, and talking about the had a nice conversation the other. Well, you know what? I've talked to a lot of one term that I, you know, people use is neurodiverse. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing that, you know, people just say, hey, yeah. And for me, you know, I am being mentally ill was always like weak. You know, there were a lot of jokes,
a lot of stigma,
you know, a lot of like sort of things that people said. And so, you know, it was very hard for me. And, you know, when I was younger, I didn't even really have the vocabulary for all the kind of the way that I felt. I didn't understand it, you know. So sometimes, you know, older, you know, Gen X and boomers, sometimes people complain, like, everybody wants to talk about their feelings now. I don't, you know. But, I mean, I think the fact that people can talk about those things. And to me, I think the internet is a big, you know, kind of an equalizer, because you can find people out there that are like you. You know, you can learn that you're not
the only one.
Yeah.
Right.
Because so when I was, I guess 13 or whatever, going through, puberty, I had, gynecomastia, which is where you grow, breast tissue. Mm. And, but I didn't know what it was, and I was very ashamed, and I wouldn't wear t-shirts. I wore a lot of button up shirts, and I kind of, you know, hunched over and all that stuff for like till I was 19. And then finally, I got the courage to ask my doctor, oh, yeah, well, that's nothing. That's this. And went in for surgery, and they did, you know, what is technically a double mastectomy, and they did that, and then that was the end of it. But, you know, I think about it, and that was like, you know, in the 80s. And if it had been now, honestly, you know what, like, You know how Google gives you like suggestions, and you start typing something in, and it starts filling in what you want. If you type in, why do I have like breasts, comes up in the top three. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like I would have found out like in an instant, you know, and I would have been able to, you know, talk to somebody about that, because I could read about it and see what it was. So I think that all these things, and that goes to theater and your show and all these things that let people know that their experiences are kind of universal. That's so important.
Yeah, like I found all kinds of forums online of particularly Korean, because that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Korean adoptees who are now adults, who are connecting and sharing, you know, this is how I began to track down my story, try this, but also their feelings about being raised in white homes and having to be part of the model minority, all of those kind of issues. Yeah, it's brilliant.
So you didn't feel like, you didn't ask yourself, well, you know, I'm an old white lady. Should I be writing this?
I ask that a lot, believe me. Yes. Marsha had to talk me off the ledge a couple of times. I'm like, you know what? I shouldn't even be telling this story, right?
Yeah, Barb's had a couple cultural consultants in along the way, for sure. Yeah, she's done her due diligence in respecting the cultures.
Well, and I had, so here on the radio, I had, you know, Tom Broadbeck, who writes for the paper.
Yeah.
I had him on a few weeks ago because he'd written this book. He's writing this book about, you know, the treaties and how the, you know, First Nations and Métis people, you know, formed Canada and all that kind of stuff.
And his earlier perceptions.
Well, he spent years writing terrible things about, you know, all kinds of things, but including Indigenous people in The Sun. And then when he moved over to the Free Press, he sort of eventually kind of changed his tune.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him here, and I asked him some very direct questions, even questions that people like on social media had said, ask him this, I want to know this, you know. And I had I had a couple people that were mad at me still for platforming him. And I said, you know what? He's got his own platform already. I am just trying to, I want him to come in here and answer to some of these things and give some context. And I said, like, why do you think you're the person to write this book? Because it's one thing to, like, change your views and try to be better and whatever, but it's a bit ballsy to kind of go, well, then I'm going to, you know, I'm this guy who said all these offensive things, and then I'm going to write this book because now I'm this super warm and cuddly ally.
Well, one thing about theater, that theater exists for many reasons. Sometimes it's just to entertain. Sometimes it's to learn about our own specific cultures and teachings. And sometimes it's for messages. And this story, and that's what I love about theater, is that it can be a vehicle for social just for the social voice.
Yeah.
It can be. And so many times over the decades, you know, and this goes into the whole idea of granting allowances and funding, you know, the people who provide the money are the ones who determine what gets said. Mm-hmm. That's how it's been for so long. Whoever pays for it determines what's said.
And
now it's finally changing. It's changing because there's so much more. And like the Fringe, we're putting up shows that wouldn't get produced anyplace else. But look, it's happening at the Fringe. And this is the social voice that needs to be addressed.
Well, and I mean, and gatekeeping exists everywhere and in all kinds of different all kinds of different ways. And Fringe is, you know, as a lottery-based, non-curated thing. I mean, there's nothing like Fringe, you know, and that's why there's some of it that's amazing and there's some of it that's terrible. But, you know, it is very sort of egalitarian in that kind of way. And I one of the sort of the big slogan that I use for our space that we're creating, the Valiant Theater, is art will save us all. And really, I mean, that's like nothing else, really. Nothing is as good as art, you know, for doing good and for making change and for reaching people. And I really feel like it's so important. So I mean, I'm always Fringe is such a great time of year for me, you know, just to see all these people doing, I mean, it's doing all these creative things. It's got an energy, you know.
I've also taught intro courses at the University of Winnipeg Theater Department, and the class that I teach, and of course the students coming in, not everybody's a theater major or film major. Some of them are like psychology or major or environmental studies or something else like that, but they're taking a theater course for one of their credits.
Because they think it's going to be easy.
And that's great. But one thing I remind them is that you can use theater to help spread or tell a story about what it is you're interested in. So all the people that are in environmental studies, it's like, write a play about the climate. And their eyes kind of go big on it because they realize, this isn't just about somebody else's play. I can write a play about something that is happening now.
Yeah.
And I think telling a story, like, we can hear all the facts, for instance, about climate change, or all the facts about how many Indigenous kids are still in the child welfare system, and isn't that a shame? But a story somehow speaks to our hearts and demands, it exercises a different muscle almost in our bodies.
And I mean, you can. We live in a post-truth, post-fact world where if you say something enough, it's the truth, and people don't even acknowledge that facts are true. But it is it's harder to refute someone's life story, someone's truth, someone's, you know, like Runaway Princess, Mary Goggin, she was just in, and that is her story of, it's a hopeful tale of heroin, hooking, and happiness. And she talks about how she stopped drinking and went off drugs, but that's in the show, and the Free Press reviewer criticized that it was too abrupt, this switch, and she just said, "That's this is exactly what happened," you know, because she because her daughter said, "I can't remember what her daughter said, but her daughter, you know, kind of said something to her that that really made her think about, you know, if I die or whatever, I mean, she's got nobody, like, you know, whatever it was, right, that just kind of flicked the switch." So yeah, the Free Press reviewer said, "Well, that's not believable, but it's what happened." And I mean, it is hard to it is hard to refute that. I just want to ask you, Barb, about something. Did you see that article about the church that they're turning into a
into a studio.
Studio.
Yes.
And that is Saint
Saint Michael and All Angels, I think.
And so that is the church has been bought by
Chipman.
Mark Chipman, and they're, you know, the Landreth brothers are doing their thing in there and whatever, and the congregation is going to continue to share that space. Now, we are we are in this old Ukrainian Catholic church, which is where our place is being built, and it's a decommissioned, you know, church that probably was in the same boat as that church where, you know, in the end there's like 12 people going there and they're all 87, right?
And the building is a big money suck.
Yeah. Well, actually the building wasn't that bad, but it's just that there's no, you know, there's a lot of these churches are not, a lot of the churches are not dynamic. Like the Roman Catholic churches are full of
immigrants.
Newcomers.
Yeah, newcomers.
So, but I'm just wondering, like, in general, like, what do you think as an old ex, not old, ex...
old too.
as a United Church veteran, like, what do you think, what do you think these sort of old school mainline churches should be doing that they're not doing? Because I mean, this is some of these places, literally they've got these buildings and they're using the sanctuary 2 hours a week.
Yeah. My most immediately former church, Crescent Fort Rouge,
oh,
in
yeah,
the Osborne
they do
Village.
All kinds of,
now
yeah.
It's the Crescent Arts Center, right?
Yeah.
So several of us, I wasn't the only one by any means, but there were a lot of seeds planted to push that.
Yeah.
I mean, and some of
Bill was one of the big ones,
Bill
right?
Gillis,
yeah.
And some of these old buildings, like the old churches, have fantastic acoustics. Like they were designed for the human voice.
Yeah. Well, but they were built before microphones.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I think the more of that, those kind of partnerships that can happen, the better. Like, yeah, we're in a post-religious world in lots of ways, and you know, that's not a bad thing necessarily. I would say I'm kind of a cultural Christian now, the way we have cultural Jews. But those spaces are built to be used by community. And you know, there's not only the AA meetings and the scouts and guides and whatever other groups are going in and out, but also artistic groups.
Well, and it's so important, you know, one of the does Bill like punk and metal and all that stuff? They did
tons of those shows there,
but you know, these young people, like, before, you know, back in the day, there would have been like community centers and places like that for them to play, which not really how community centers work anymore, and there's almost nowhere for these young people to play, so
for,
I mean,
free,
having
right?
So having this having these spaces it's so important. And for me, I'm a recovering evangelical. So for me, I feel like my religion is art. You know, I mean, this is the thing that I've had God up the wazoo my whole life, and thank you very much. But I mean, we all need art, right? And so I am always glad to see these spaces that are being used for all these creative endeavors.
Absolutely. And art is a spiritual practice, to my mind. It's it nurtures our spirits. It helps us connect with others. It helps us connect with community. So the more of that we can do, the better, the healthier we all are.
Never enough art. We're going to get some more guests in here. Let's have a song. What should we listen to while we're getting you out of here?
Oh, how about Mother and Child Reunion?
Okay.
Paul Simon.
So many, you give me something with so many letters here to...
Sorry.
It's fine. Mother and Child.
There's another version by a female singer who sang it. She's beautiful voice. Yeah. But I can't remember her name offhand. Maybe we actually have it in the show.
Maybe it'll pop up here. I don't know. I don't know that these are the same. These songs are just called Mother and Child. Is that the same song?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we're going to, I don't want to risk it. We're going to listen to the Paul Simon version. Barb Chains, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being here. Marsha, what's your last name?
Knight.
Marsha Knight. Ugh, should have found that out before. Very easy to remember. Thank you both so much. We're going to listen to Mother and Child Reunion. Don't miss Agency. It is selling out. It is happening, but selling out in the good way. And it is happening over at Asper Theater, part of Fringe Fest. What's next show is tonight?
Next show is tonight. And then...
what time?
Tonight at 8:15.
Tonight at 8:15.
Friday 9:30 and Saturday at 12:15.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment. This is Paul Simon here on CKUW.
Of a lifetime runs over and over again. No, I would not give you false hope on this strange and mournful day. But the mother and child reunion is only a motion away. Oh, little darling of mine, I just can't believe it so. Though it seems strange to say, I've never been laid so low in such a mysterious way. In the course of a lifetime runs over and over again. But I would not give you false hope on this strange and awful day, when the mother and child reunion is on the emotion way. Oh, oh, the mother and child reunion is on the emotion way. Oh, the mother and child reunion is on the emotion way.
And that was Simon and Garfunkel with Mother and Child, something, something. I am, nobody cares. I
such a good one. Look it up.
I'm Kelly Hughes. This is the CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, CKUW.ca. 3:38 p.m. We are doing hours and hours and hours and hours of Fringe programming here. So you're welcome. This is the thing you didn't ask for. But we're doing it anyway. Turning Megan's laughing already. So I'm going to turn her mic on. Megan Phillips is here.
Hi.
I'm going to turn that mic down.
Oh, yeah. I project. I just finished a show, so my projection is on point.
And I forgot your name already.
Yeah, Bobby Wesley here.
Bobby.
I'm a groupie slash roadie from Orlando.
Bobby Wesley? Yeah.
Wesley, the one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what? I was going to guess your name was Brad, so I was very close. Devin Gillingham, how you doing?
Kelly, I'm well. How are you, man?
Is it a bit kind of steamy outside?
Oh, yeah.
A little bit kind of swampy?
No. It's steamy in here. I thought that's what you were going to say.
Yeah, it's all Devin.
Outside
actually.
It's fine.
Because,
yeah,
I mean, you know, like, you guys do look a bit warm.
Yeah.
No,
but like,
you're right about that, Kelly. I'm but, so fine.
But Brody over here, he looks
Bebo.
Very...
I was told this was a sensual show. Bringing that steamy energy.
Sensitive show, Billy. Yeah, sensitive, bad. Billy.
It's Bobby.
Bobby, sorry.
We'll get there by the end of the show. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Who has their...
Brett Wesley, is
Keller,
that who
you
it
can
is?
Ask us questions,
no, please,
or what's going on.
Call in with your favorite name for me.
I can't. He's just... He's doing the hype. He's... Are you paying by the hour or what? Can I have a thing?
Someone.
Here,
yeah.
you can... This one's bigger. You can wave yourself with that one.
Oh, thank you.
That one's bigger. Do you
I
have a flyer?
I actually do, yeah. I've got a little...
Megan,
yeah, this is a good one.
Megan Phillips is a fringe veteran. Ooh. Who is doing Making It, a solo pop musical cabaret thingy pondering creative success. And there's a star that says, but funny. And that is, did I say that in the right
yes.
tone?
You know what?
Oh, sorry. Why am I answering? Sorry, Megan.
No, I prefer white men to answer all of my questions for me, actually.
Me too. Me too. Sorry.
Okay, I'll turn his mic on.
It just feels wrong.
You brought a white man with you. I'm just so,
I did. Yeah. I did.
I'm subservient, though, to be fair.
Are you a power bottom?
I'm whatever form of bottom she tells me to be. Actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Are you in the show or you're not in the show?
I am now, apparently.
Okay.
She just came from a show. The next one is 4:30. It is over at
tomorrow. Dave's. To be clear, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, so yeah,
45
today.
Minutes from now.
That's not allowed, and that is over at Cinematech. What did you hand me here? Which one is it? It's so small.
I'm playing piano with the Club Soda Improv Group. Yeah.
Seriously, look how small that is.
You know what, Kelly?
Last time
I had a postcard with tiny lettering and you got so mad at how small it was I actually increased the font because I knew that if I didn't, you would be mad
about
it.
Nobody has ever done anything with me in mind, but thank you. No, this is like just 3-point type here. Well, Devin is the new person I'm going to... I don't think Devin did this.
No,
I didn't.
I was given a stack.
This
the
is
team.
The Club Soda Improv show.
Yes, indeed.
Which is happening just downstairs here at Asper Center.
Mm-hmm.
The next show is today at
4:45.
I cannot read that.
That's okay. I'll let them know.
4:45. So it's very...
It is soon.
Oh, so you got to run downstairs
do
and do that.
Have a
oh, that's fun.
Oh, yeah. It's still super fun. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
wow.
fun.
Oh,
yeah.
Are
let's
you,
hustle it up.
Devin, are you doing the thing like they do, like the people make up the songs and you play the...
No, it's not. There's not a musical theater component. I'm just there to provide ambiance.
So it's a background gig.
It's a background gig.
Wallpaper gig.
Yeah. With the occasional emotional cue.
You don't even play piano. You just sit there with ambiance.
I sit there, yeah. I just shine a spotlight around on different people in the audience. No, yeah, I just,
you
know.
Just show your facial expression and it creates
a mood for
the audience.
I react to the show on stage, yeah. I sit on stage. I'm a paid audience member, essentially.
So you're like a Poverty Row Paul DeGuirce.
I'm sure he would say that, right? I'm sorry, Paul. I don't even know Paul. But
you don't know Paul? Paul is the...
I know who he is.
Yeah,
but
Paul's a very notable jazz pianist in town, and he is the guy for...
A jazz what, sorry?
12-inch pianist.
Okay, great.
And he is the piano player for
yeah.
Outside Joke, and they are another improv.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you know
yes,
what I'm talking about.
Yes, of course. And then I don't know who accompanies the Dungeons & Dragons show, but they have a similar thing.
What's going on with your tum, Megan?
Oh, I just felt fat for a second.
Oh.
So I'm just feeling the salt bloat. Yeah.
Salt bloat. You get
yeah,
that
yeah.
after a show?
Huh?
You get that after a show, that feeling?
Yeah, well, I also ate just a lot of like flaxseed and yogurt, and so I've got like the dairy and the expanding flax going on.
Is that part of the show, or is that something?
No,
after?
That's just for you guys. That's
special
for the listeners.
So we have to get you out of here before you expand all the way? Is that...
No, this is as furl as it's going to get.
That's why
today.
The room is
yeah,
so
yeah.
warm.
No.
You blamed
good.
It on me, but you were deflecting. The steaminess of the room, I mean.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, that it was me?
And it was you the whole time.
Oh, it was me the whole time. Well, that's just a given. I'm very good looking.
Megan, I would like to ask you what the show is this year, but I don't know if I should ask you or Billy Bob.
You can ask me. Although
get more in the mic and the. You can ask, move it your way. You don't have to just.
You can ask me. Should I answer like a sultry? You can ask me, Kelly.
You sound like you're having some kind of a
stroke,
a medical problem, but
probably.
But it's no, you can answer it however you
the
like.
Flax seed.
Dealer's choice.
Yeah, you can ask me. What do you want to know?
Well, I just asked you. Tell us about the show.
Actually, what you said was you wanted to ask me, but that wasn't a question. That was a sentence.
15 hours of fringe.
Go ahead and ask me anything you want to know.
Has anyone ever accused you of being too good of a listener?
Yes, often.
Hanging on certain details mm-hmm. that maybe you just should have let go?
Yeah, pretty much all of my relationships, yeah.
How are all of your relationships going?
Terribly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you're here. Tell mm-hmm. us about the show.
It's a delightful show. It's a total departure from anything that I've done before, and it's a show that's lived in my heart for the past 10 years.
Wow.
It's a musical comedy interspersed with storytelling and stand-up, all pondering what it means to have spent 20 years in the industry and what creative success is. What does it mean to make it?
Yeah. And so now that it's out of your heart, is your heart empty or no?
That remains to be seen. You know, we had a really great crowd today. So it's just like, why get validation from romance and love when you can get it from an audience, you know?
But I mean, you've had some serious subject matter, but you know, your shows mm-hmm. are always entertaining. So
people
aren't coming and going, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I like comedy with a gut punch. That's my my motto.
So people are just, there's no gut punch in this one. And is that
there's
the
a little gut punch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still feels.
Yeah. It's softened.
He's just looking at me.
This all right, like, back to
in,
me.
Jump in.
He doesn't understand radio. It's not. This is not like Howard Stern, you know, where there's this video and you can see what we're doing. Nobody can actually see what we're doing. But audiences are happy. They're loving it. Everybody really loves it.
Yeah. And every show is just getting better and better. And, you know, I've really come to trust that the only feedback that matters post-show is the box office attendance, because they're the ones who hear the real deal as the patrons are exiting the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so the response from them after the second and the third and the fourth shows, not the first one, we can just not pretend we can, that didn't happen. But the second, third and fourth shows, it's just, they've been saying overwhelming feedback, just joy, singing, clapping, all that stuff.
So where did you open the show?
Here.
Oh, this is brand spanking new.
Yeah, it's a brand spanking new baby. Yeah, she had to be slapped awake. It, like, there was a lot of screaming.
Yeah. Is Winnipeg a good place to open a show?
Yes. I would not have opened the show anywhere else.
Yeah.
I love Winnipeg.
And do you think that if a person happens to do a show and it happens to suck and they're doing it here, like, I mean, do you think that it will be pretty obvious?
I don't think there's ever an artist that sucked in the history of the world, Kelly. So,
someone, and I won't say who it was, many years ago, was doing a show here, and the show was about the financial crisis. So it was like 2008 or 2009 or.
Look, I'm right here, Kelly. I'm right here. There.
And he actually, and it bombed so bad that he was going to, I think, Victoria Next or wherever, and he actually changed the show. He actually just went back to an old show because for whatever reason.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know that. I guess let's not say the show was no good, but people didn't want to see it. You know what I mean? People didn't respond to it. People weren't picking up what he was putting down. Right. Mm. Have you ever had that kind of thing where, you know, you're doing something and you're like, I don't know if this is, you know, or you're always doing the right thing, you're always on the right track, you're always
I'm pretty perfect, Kelly. Yeah. I thought we established that, but you know, it's good that you make mistakes.
I'm just
sometimes
being devil's advocate.
I would say yes, And what I have learned is the importance of surrounding yourself with hype men bottoms who can tell you that you can never do wrong and you're always going to do right. That's the point. You got an entourage surrounding you. But no, in all
honesty,
Bobby's a
yes man.
Bobby's a yes man. Yeah, no, let me answer that honestly, because I will say,
finally,
what has been fucked. Fungu.
Fun.
Said it already. Yeah,
fun you. What I will say is the importance of surrounding myself with, when I'm creating a new show, with folks who have like-minded sensibilities and the same creative values, and that we have the same vision with the show, but can see things that I don't see and actually tell me the truth about what it is, so that I get this outside eye and then can incorporate the feedback in real time. And I think that's the thing that makes the show joyful.
Well, collaboration is great. And I feel like there's always things that we don't know and things that we're never going to think of. And we're opening a place called the Valiant Theater, and we did an event last month. It was a fundraiser, and I had some people helping me, and there were a few times when somebody, you know, would say, hey, well, what, this isn't, what do you think, you know, what about this, like, why is it all white men on the stage? We had this sort of thing, and I was like, oh, you're right, I don't know. And it was a thing that, like, made total sense to me, and I understood it when she said it, but it was not a thing that I would have thought of, right? And as soon as she said it, I knew she was right. But, you know, there's just things that are kind of blind spots, things that are not,
totally,
you know.
And I think it's taken me a long time to feel firm enough in what I have to offer as a creative to be able to take constructive feedback and not take it personally. Because I think that that just comes with time. It's hard to do at the beginning.
And I think, too, I mean, you have to... it has to be people you trust. I mean, it's
100%.
Everybody's got an opinion, and you know, the thing about having people around you that you trust and people that you can collaborate with and whatever, I mean, they also know they know how to talk to you and they know how to tell you those things, and they also know that if you get a bit huffy about it, that it's going to pass and you're going to eventually see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Except I'm perfect, right, Bobby? Like, I don't think I've gotten huffy once.
Oh, of course. You always have the perfect disposition and correct attitude in response to all of the glowing words that I have to say for you. But that being said, after yes-ma'aming you, in addition to setting up your stage and getting you the very specific Starbucks order that you insist upon,
okay.
I will say working with Megan's actually really rewarding, because I think we both understand that we want to put the best show forward, ultimately, and that in collaborating together and building out what is a new show that is still finding its footing despite all the beautiful, there's beautiful songs throughout it that are very funny and very connected. Each show, we're finding jokes that work in certain ways or stories that are popping in really interesting ways and connecting with the audience, and you can feel the response in the venue.
Yeah.
And so then after the fact, as we're talking or late at night while we're punching up jokes or rewriting things or just finding our footing and the way forward, it's the collaboration is great when you know that both of us just want the show to improve and we want the best thing for each other.
And sometimes it's a bit hard when you're actually on stage, you got your own thing going on, and it's hard to, you know, in general, you've got a sense of what's going on out in the audience, but you're not really picking up all the nuances and all the, you know, like, here's a thing that people thought was funny and I didn't even know it was funny.
Yeah, totally. And especially in a venue like Cinematheque, which I love. Like, Cinematheque's one of my favorite, and it's a movie theater, so it's not designed to have the aliveness of an audience in mind.
Yeah.
And so there can be a lot of jokes that may kill, but like, I have an in-ear monitor because I use a lot of music in my show, so sometimes I just miss the response. So to get the outside eye of the audience to be like, oh no, that actually slayed, you just couldn't hear it, is helpful.
Does the monitor ever fall all the way in?
All the time.
Oh.
All the time.
Oh. And Bobby's gonna fish it out.
Yeah.
So then what is creative success?
You'll have to come to the show to find out.
Okay, pay your $15. Devin,
that's a good answer. Kelly, nice
Devin,
to see
Devin, Club
you.
Soda Improv. Who is that? Who are those folks there?
There, it's an improv troupe.
Can you name all the people?
That's no, what I can't. Know. Well, we got Kristen Einerson. That's the person who, that was my connection to this team.
Yeah.
Comedy person in Winnipeg. Oh, you got Kristen, you got Kev, you got Jesse, Carrie.
This sounds like you're just naming
no,
people.
No,
yeah, he's just looking up names on his phone.
No, it sounds like he's naming people from Degrassi.
God, I hope they don't hear this. Sorry, everyone. No, man, I just, you know, I pop in, I have my little corner of this stage and play some piano with these folks, which is something I haven't done a ton of. And in fact, I'm not even on all of these shows. It's a rotate. I'm sort of filling in for the main person, Quinn Joseph.
Piano is not your first instrument.
It is, actually. I grew up playing piano. I was five years old playing classical piano.
Yeah.
And went all the way through doing the classical piano thing.
Yeah.
But I haven't done it publicly very much.
How far did you get? What grade did you get to?
I have my ARCT.
Stop it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know I was around royalty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll show you the certificate. I've got a copy in the car.
Stop it.
I've got two copies in the car. Kelly, I'll give you one.
Because I think I know you more as a bass player.
That's definitely, I mean, that's where I feel more comfortable.
Fish?
Yeah, I play a big fish. That's
yeah,
what I call,
big
old
fish.
I call a fish. certainly
wait, I have a question. When you're doing the bass playing, are you one of the ones who like really gets into it with your face? Because
that's
the most important part of bass playing.
Those are important
the facial expressions are the key to any band working of the bass player.
Yeah, no, I think I deliver facially. Yeah.
You think you deliver? you put out facially. Is the show fun? Do people like it?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, they've been doing it for longer than I've been aware that they've existed. So they have a following, they have a built-in group of people that are coming to these shows, and they're great audiences.
And people like improv because it's kind of, even people that don't really want to go see an actual show will go see improv. And
I think they're also delivering that thing of like, if you don't know what to expect, it's going to be good. So it doesn't matter what your expectations are necessarily.
Well, I did see an improv show last night, and it was a bit, and they're always good. I'll say it was improvisation, and they're always good. But at the beginning, it was a bit wobbly, and I was like,
that's exciting too. How are they going to turn this around?
Yeah. But then by the end, I'd forgotten about that because there was some very some very funny stuff. So it's better to be a little not great at the beginning and then better at the end, as
better
opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, even though you're remembering the beginning.
I was listening to a podcast with Mike Birbiglia, and he was saying the podcast Good One, and it's all about him defining his jokes. And he was saying, "Do you have any piece of comedy advice?" was the question, and Mike Birbiglia's answer.
So
was,
say his name again, Mike.
Birbiglia.
Birbiglia. I thought
Mike
it was
Birbiglia.
Bobby.
No, I just wanted to hear you say it again.
Yeah, I nailed it by the fourth time. But he said that one of the biggest pieces of, if nothing else sticks with your set, it's how you stick the landing that matters. Because he was saying he was at a dental convention. Nobody spoke English. Nobody got his jokes. He's doing stand-up and storytelling. They don't even know who he is. But then he finishes by saying, and thank you for the work that you do, because you are changing the world.
Big cheers.
Standing ovation.
Yeah.
Standing ovation.
And they'll have him back at
stick
that convention.
Stick the landing. Yeah. He said he bombed hardest than he'd ever had, and he got a standing ovation.
So just pander to the audience.
That's
if you
it. Stick
if
the
can.
Landing.
Yeah.
But it's a great show. They're a great team. They're clearly very like a tight-knit group, and I'm happy to pop in.
You have also you've got a thing next month.
I've got a thing next month. If I can segue to something fringe adjacent real quick.
Yeah,
I've got a record coming out on August 24th.
Nice.
There'll be a show at the West End Cultural Center.
Yeah.
Myself and Teresa Thor are putting out records at the same time. We're doing a co-release. So that'll be fun. It'll be a fun night, I think.
And is it going to be better than Maplewood or just the same?
Oh, so much better. I have no idea. I hope it'll be different, maybe. Yeah. I think it'll be fun.
tell me when and where again?
August 24th, Saturday night at the West End Cultural Center.
Amazing. That is amazing.
Thanks, man.
Bobby, is there some shows you want to go see? Is there a show that you want to tell me about that somebody's paying you to tell me about?
Oh, no one's paying me anything to be here. I'd like to make that as clear as possible.
Bobby, let's talk about your life choices,
yes,
Bobby.
Yes, Megan tricked me into working on her show in Orlando, and apparently I can't quit you. Here I still am. No, I flew up.
Because you look like you're maybe smart enough to get a real job.
Oh, yeah. I'm strangely employable, yet I'm still in the arts. It's a series of odd choices I've made in my life. If my mother back in America can hear this, she'll be nodding her head enthusiastically at this.
She can't, right?
I'll be here, though.
Sorry, do you want shows? Nobody's paying you, but...
No one's paying me here, in addition to seeing Making It, which is getting better and better every day. My buddy Paul Strickland is a brilliant storyteller. I do storytelling in Florida and around the States as well. And Paul's become a real good buddy in white men who stand on stage and tell earnest, sometimes made-up things to be inspirational and quasi-manipulative. So that's a great show. Chase Padgett is from where I live in Orlando as well, so I get to hang out with him. But no one needs to help Chase sell tickets.
No, you're talking about the white men that are already getting people to come to the show.
Exactly. through online solo show class that I took, taught by one Megan Phillips and a legendary TJ Daw, I got to meet a local Winnipegger who has a show, Mornings at Miss Mabel's, and Sherry Pierce is